Welcome to the Joe Customs Podcast.
We make a custom, it's a unique piece of artwork that nobody else has.
John, what you're saying is you like to hold it and play with it until the idea comes.
Some folks are taking like popular songs and the high notes are adding the various sounds.
Oh, you guys are just artists who use the action figures as your canvas.
JoeCustoms.com is the home of the world's premier G.I. Joe customizing website. Its purpose, to learn, improve, share, entertain, and showcase the work of the customizing community, wherever and whenever possible, to whomever shows interest. We'll help the community. Wherever there's customizing, Joe Customs is there.
Joe Customs.
This is John, a.k.a. P-Love. I'm here with Brad, a.k.a. TR101AL, Dan the Spectre, and our guest tonight, Brian, BCOS74.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Guys, say first of all, I want to be on the podcast with you guys tonight.
Oh, we're glad to have you.
Oh, thank you.
We're getting some feedback issues, so I'm going to let Dan take over the interview.
Okay, well, let's start at the beginning. What got you into customizing in the first place?
All right. To be honest, the very first custom I actually made was a God of War Ares figure from the Xena Warrior Princess series. When I first saw the figure sets, I was actually amazed. I was collecting figures from every genre of toys, Alias and Zorro, and I love the Xena Warrior Princess figure set, not because I'm a hornball, but because the figures are a great concept, great idea. But then I was disappointed because they never made an Ares figure. So I wondered, how can I make my own Ares figure? And I was reading Toy Fair Magazine, Tomar's Guide, Wizard, all the magazines were collecting figures. I came across an article written by Tom Fowling about how he does the dry brushing. And I took an autonomous figure and modified it, sculpting the posture of the biceps, sculpting the posture of the hair, extending the hair down, and doing dry brush and a painting on the body. It made my first autonomous figure. And then I'm like, what else can I make as far as a custom figure goes? And I started making custom figures of friends of mine and people I've actually met and knew, and I started making most of the stuff I did was systems figure style. And I wasn't collecting G.I. Joes. I was collecting when I was a kid, but when I got older, I stopped collecting G.I. Joes, and it became about the customization only. One day, I came up and decided, you know, I want to make something to fit these 18 scale motorcycles I had, and the only thing I could figure that I could fit on was G.I. Joe figures. And I started making bikers to fit on different style of motorcycle I had. And then as it progressed into the 2007 series, we came back to the original style of G.I. Joes, and it just steamrolled from there. Almost like a big snowball effect. From like one small custom figure into a constant evolution of customizing. And then one day I came across Joe Customs and learned that I'm not the only person that does this. And there's other tips out there and other customizers and techniques. And I'm like, you know what? I can improve my stuff learning from what other people's done. At the time, there was no one else doing it in my area. And the only information I got as far as making an actual custom figure was in the magazines or talking hobbyists, model train builders, and that stuff. But I mean, my customizing began when I realized that there was like pretty much all the other customizers out there, there's a void in the toy lines that we wanted to fill ourselves. That we said, you know, if the manufacturer's not going to do it, we'll do it ourselves.
That's pretty much how we all got started in it, making our own things to fill in gaps from other, you know, gaps that we felt the companies had left for us. As everybody knows, you do some of the most out there customs from any genre you can imagine. What thought process goes into picking your projects?
You know, it's kind of funny because I'm a little bit, I would say, psychotic in a sense, because for me, I don't decide on the customs in a sense. Most times, the customs decide on the part themselves, and it just, I will see a part, and it could be the most obscure, weirdest part you can imagine, and it just pops. I, you know what, this will work great with that, and I will go through body parts and starter parts, and mix and match them up. Just fit with that piece. It's only that one piece inspires you to create something amazing that else you thought of. And I always love it when people see my work and say, you know what, that's great, and they actually make the same thing. Maybe not exactly the same, but on the same you know, that nobody else does. Because, you know, you can go to a toy store and buy 100 of the same figures. Everybody has the same figure. We make a custom, it's a unique piece of artwork that nobody else has. That is, even though there can be 10 versions of that, made by 10 different customizers, each one has a significant uniqueness to it itself.
That's very true. That is true. You can see a lot of people do the same character or the same concept, and they're each different, depending on the customizer's skill level, artistic style, etc. And as most people are aware, I'm sure, you have a focus on the Dreadnoughts. And we know you've made Dreadnoughts for all different genres. Why don't you give us a little bit of insight into why you like the Dreadnoughts so much?
Should I say love or joy or... I'm not going to say what I mean as far as why I like the Dreadnoughts so much. I mean, the truth is, I mean, in the G.I. Joe universe, you got to look at the names, Tom, Dick, and Harry. The names of Ripper, Torch, and Buzzer. Tom, Dick, and Harry was a generic reference for anybody. Any person, any man could be a Dreadnought. There was no parameter, there was no guideline. Anyone could be a Dreadnought. And that was like the inspiration for my Dreadnought. So I like the fact that there's no guidelines. There's nothing that says this is the way a Dreadnought has to look. You know, if you're doing a G.I. Joe custom, it's got to look military. There's a military feel with a G.I. Joe. Cobra has a utilitarian feel as far as a whole union group. But Dreadnoughts, they're a rammed, shackle group that had no boundaries, no borderlines. So any person can make a custom that has nothing to do with what's out there right now as far as Dreadnoughts. And say, hey, look, I made this character, and he's my new Dreadnought. You know what? It fits in with all the Dreadnoughts. You know, and I always loved the original three because they were unique from anything else that Hasbro or the G.I. Joe toy line ever did. They were just distinctive look characters. And also, when I was a kid growing up, my favorite movie of all times was the trilogy of Mad Max. Mad Max, Road Warrior, and Mad Max the Thunderdome. And I actually got to speak to Roy Rudat, who came up with the idea and designs for the Dreadnoughts, and he was actually inspired by those same three movies to create the Dreadnoughts. And it was that post-apocalyptic design characters, which I was inspired by. I mean, that whole, you know, world goes open, topsy-turvy, and everybody's, you know, on their own. So that's why I was like the concept of the Dreadnoughts. And in the comic books, there was different versions of the Dreadnoughts, not to mention the cartoons. They had Worlds Without End, the Dreadnoughts and Ultimate Universe of Police Officers. And when I said they became a member of their own cover band called Cold Slither, and the Transformers G.I. Joe crossover, they were synchronized along with partnered with the Donkey Kong. You know, and it was something that, you know, you look at them and say, you know, great ideas, but no toy company ever gonna make something like this. So I kind of decided, you know, part of my central focus on my custom is the Dreadnoughts. And I always try to make a different version of different styles of Dreadnoughts, how they appear in different versions and different worlds. And I'm actually working on a couple of secret projects as far as Dreadnoughts. One of them, which hopefully will be done pretty soon, and I'll be posting it within the next couple of weeks, which is going to be amazing, everybody, because it's taking Dreadnoughts back to the old school roots. And that's all I can say.
Yeah, I've got to say, I've seen what he's talking about. I can't reveal anything, but they are spectacular. And I think everybody's going to get a kick out of them when he debuts them.
Yeah. Something Dana brought up was, the way you take a theme that maybe somebody else approached, but kind of put your own spin on it. One of your favorite customs that you've done that I like is the Phasing Zartan. I've seen other people do it, you know, using some of the clear parts or, you know, somebody else used paint, but you did like that physical manifestation with the, you know, the sculpting on it that actually showed him phasing. I just thought that was brilliant. You know, it's something I've seen, but, you know, just your take on it. I really enjoyed that a lot.
That figure is actually even cooler when you see it up close because he used UV paint. That when you shine UV light on it, the phasing effect glows, and it's really cool.
Oh, wow. How come you didn't show that?
I actually did the UV painting after I posted the pictures. It was like a second time I went, you know what, let's see how this looks. And I honestly, I've been a little too lazy and preoccupied with other stuff to actually take some pictures. But I had a few other projects I've I still got to take pictures and post. So it's one of the things I got to go back and take pictures of, because I actually finished up the three figure set of the Dreadheads. Most of them know I actually did Otis and Roscoe already, and I recently finished up Joe Bob of the Dreadheads. So my three figure set of Dreadheads are done. So I'm basically going to go back, take pictures of them, along with the Dark Head. But I want to do is I'm going to do multiple figures in one posting. This way it doesn't blow up the board too much. I do them threads. So now I can keep everything grouped together in one shot. As far as inspiration for the phase of shifting or morphing Zartan from General Hawk to himself was based upon the image in the G.I. Joe Club magazine. And I'm like, I'm looking at it, I saw the image in the magazine, I'm like, that's a great look. And I want to see how I can do that myself in a figure. And the one thing Dan can attest is I love a challenge. I love something that's unique, something that pushes the boundaries. And like a couple of the guys have said, you know, I think they're an easy way of taking the lower torso from a Zartan figure and just the upper torso of the Joe Hawk and put it together. With the fact that I actually come in half on a diagonal skew, the two different pieces, and fusing together, it was shocking. And it was a challenge working with a hot glue to get the right effect. I know a few guys have practiced with hot glue, and I'm going to tell you, it's not an easy thing to work with sometimes, and it can be a little painful also. But, if you're patient with it, the effects are amazing you can get with it. From, vision effects to flamethrower effects to lightning bolts. You have to be patient with it, and trial and error works great. The good thing is, the hot glue sticks don't cost so much money again.
Yeah, I've used it, and the thing for me is that I have to work while it's hanging. I have to let those drips and all that stuff hang down for me to do it, which is totally opposite to how I sculpt, from the ground up. So that's the hardest part for me, is just reversing it and trying to figure out how it's going to flow down to have that kind of effect.
That's what I said. With hot glue, it's always going to be a trial and error. When I was a kid, my first customizing tool was a hot glue gun. At 8 years old, I was basically hot gluing vehicle parts into vehicles. I used to smash my toys and make new stuff out of them. Just hot gluing and stuff together.
Wait, that's still how? Of course, that's how I do it now. What are you talking about? Brad, did you want to ask anything?
Yeah, I really enjoyed your takes on Freddy Krueger and the character Death and the character Legion. They're out of the box, and it's something kind of neat and new and exciting as opposed to the regular normal characters that we see.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention the Freddy Krueger figure, because the pictures actually don't show the reality of it, because I actually took Staples and hand sculpted the actual blades onto the finger. So the Freddy Krueger action figure actually has real blades, metal blades, which is kind of creepy to think about it, but it actually came out better than I expected. Now, another custom I actually helped work on, which a few people actually saw at the G.I. Joe show, was submitted and done by a friend of mine called Dashvod, or Nick. It was this Doomsday Viper figure. Now, most of the posted pictures don't show the full set, but the figure is, he actually wanted to make a character with working LEDs, and he actually brought me to actually figure out how to do this, and I actually worked it on to actually create working LEDs in the head and the chest. So anybody actually got to see at the convention recently at the Flash and Joe convention, when it was actually working, the eyes lit up with a green LED that was dribbled into the head, and two LEDs on the chest. The LEDs on the head worked by having the helmet connected. The moment the helmet was disconnected, the LEDs were off. And LED in the chest would light up from a battery pack attached to the finger stand that only worked when the finger was actually on the stand. It took about a couple weeks to actually get the logistics working right on that, but he was amazed and impressed by that.
And which convention was that at?
The last one, the one with the knife force set.
Okay, in the necklace. Yeah.
So, like, anybody who's been Cody, Doomsday Viper, which was the Viper with the green arms, which also, he actually had an arm from a Glottalus figure, and he needed help creating a duplicate side on the right side of what the Glottalus arm looked like on the left side. So I actually utilized the hot glue effect to create the vein effect, and he actually did a lot of the other work to create the paint jobs. So it actually balanced out, so it looked like the same arm left to right. So a lot of times, you know, without hot glue, you can take an arm from one character, or you have hot glue sculpting, create a duplicate side on the opposite version. So if anybody has a globulous arm, right arm, that they say, no, that looks great, they want to create the same thing on the left side for another figure, utilizing the same duplicate arm, you know, practice a little epoxy sculpting. You know, you never know what you can come up with.
Trying to go through my pictures to see if I can find that custom.
It was, the torso was a Toxo Viper torso. The helmet was a Blastar, Blaster's helmet. The backpack was the splicing together of Eel's backpack along with the back lower part of the Tentacle Viper backpack. The head was from a Worms figure. It was, jumpsuit was Lugan Blue. The mask was done black. Elbow was done with silver visor across the face. And it had green arms, like lime green arms with red trimming on it, and as far as the beams. And of course, that one also utilizes UV tech in the arms and the face, as far as the eyes go.
Yeah, I remember seeing the photos. That was actually a pretty cool looking figure. One of the things I think is fantastic about your customizing is, as you said, you know, you don't really take the easy way out of things. We were discussing a little earlier today, he was making the belt for a character, and I suggested simply using a piece of jewelry chain instead of hand-making the links, which is what he's doing. And his answer was, well, where's the fun in that? It's too easy. I like the fact that you don't take any shortcuts on anything.
No, I mean, besides, when it comes to customizing, I mean, anybody can put together body parts and slap on some paint, but you take the extra steps to make some of the more realistic, sculpting the hair, sculpting body parts. It's a challenge involved that makes it more fun, you know? It's like, you know, you bring something that nobody else has thought about, nobody else has done, so you get uniqueness to the figures you made. And you actually say, I made this. I mean, of course, you can inspire other people, and I would love, like, one of my greatest customs I did, which was a small thing, was a spirit, or even, I think it was a shot checker's bone arrow. I actually made it with all the actual accessories, the sling strap, the stabilizer, the silencers on the string, and string the whole bow, and people were amazed by one guy even said, you know, if the feathers on the arrows were in red, it would look exactly like my pecan bow. You know, and it's just the time, it's just take the patience and a little, you know, neuroticism, a lot of points of being, trying to get exactly true life as far as the custom can go.
Yeah, I've actually seen that piece in person, and it's fantastic. It looks like somebody took a compound bow and shrunk it down. It is such a beautiful bit of work.
Yeah, I've seen a few people do that. And, yeah, the amount of work, like, I don't think people understand how much work goes into making something look like it's really functional like that. It's beyond me wanting to do it. Sorry, go ahead. It's like once you actually sit down trying to figure out how to make that stuff look like it would in the real world, it takes so much time and so much effort, and it's one of those things that I'd like to do, and then I realize, yeah, that takes too much work. I'm fine with the plastic.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. A lot of people are actually kind of weary about making their own costumes because of the fact they think there's not enough time. But that's the thing. As far as customizing, there is no timeline. There is no time clock. You know, we don't have to sit there and spend all day long on a custom unless you choose to. I mean, you can work on one piece at a time, let's say, come back to it later on and continue on. I mean, myself, and Dan has the same thing. We have numerous work in projects going on. It's like, you know, you get one day, you think, oh, we're going to spend a few hours, do something else, go back to another day. And as you go along, I mean, little by little, you've been doing stages and create the custom that you're happy with instead of rushing through it. I mean, the one guy I'm most amazed by is Iron Will, because really his time frame, his job, and he comes up with some amazing custom every single day. And lines are clean and crisp. I'm like, where did you find the time of this? I have no idea, because sometimes I only have a few hours a weekend to work at a custom.
Yeah, his turnaround is I don't know, jaw-dropping. You know, he'll show a work-in-progress picture one night, and the very next night, and here it is completed.
Yeah, it's amazing. He turns out stuff so incredibly fast.
I can do that, but it wouldn't look anywhere near as good. I'm sorry, say that again?
I think he comes out with some great-looking stuff also.
Yeah.
I mean, I love his, the force effects he did for, Avengers.
Young Justice?
The Titans, I think it was.
The Young Justice.
Yeah. Young Justice. The force effects he came up with, the idea, great concept, I love the execution. Special use of the Invisible Man body cat shell for the Native American, it was the name. So if I can think of that count.
Apache Chief.
But,
yeah, for the Apache Chief, he used that.
The Apache Chief, that was it. The Apache Chief, the power effect, when he actually comes out and, like, you know, the little man body, like, that's a genius idea. The fact that, you know, he was looking outside the box to come up with the effect. And that's a great concept, great idea, and a great execution of that figure alone.
Brad?
And Brian, how far in advance do you plan out a lot of your projects?
Sometimes I can plan out months in advance. Other times, it's just a spur of the moment, it just clicks. And I'll just look and start thinking, this will look great, and I'm going to start working on this figure. Other times, it could be, I could be working on something, and I'll be looking through parts, and I'm like, you know, I just follow the video. I'm saying, I'm going to put it aside and work on this piece. And then as soon as I start filling around with other parts, it just comes up. So as far as planning, generally, I never actually plan it. It just kind of happens. It just, almost as if, like, the muse just strikes you and you're inspired to create something and you've got fun with it. But in the most part, I usually plan around at least a month to a week ahead of time so I make sure I have all the parts I need. Because sometimes you can go through all your bags of parts and realize you're missing certain things. So you gotta wait around for a caster to come up with a part, or the person online, or driving around on eBay for the solder parts, and you wait for parts to finish up. So while I'm waiting for those things to finish up, for something that's already in my head, I'm coming up with other ideas in the back of my head that I start working out as well. Which is why I wound up with multiple custom working projects at the same time.
As you've forgotten your list of coming up with parts, you forgot you called Dan to see if he's got the part.
I have to call Dan. I just look at Dan's swap shop site and say, hey, you know, I know Dan has a piece here, and if you have it available still, but hey, come on down to my place, and I got a few parts here. Look it through and swap out the pieces. If Dan doesn't have it, it probably doesn't exist. If Dan doesn't have it, he probably was sadly in his garage. Because turns out Dan has a plethora, immensum of pieces. One of the other projects I've been working on, which the figures are done, I'm just waiting to finish trying to work on the central piece of it. Which tonight, I'm going to give everybody a not a preview showing, but a little heads up. I actually created a figure set from the Hasbro board game Clue, and I'm working on a mansion that Dan has helped me out with the secret stairwells, utilizing the staircases from the Prince of Persia figure set, and also helped me out with the LED LEDs, utilizing the UV lights from the Pirates of the Caribbean figure set. And I have all the characters, and one of them's going to have the secret reveal, the lights go on in the mansion, showing who the murderer actually was of Mr. Bobby. And the figure set includes Professor Plum, Colonel Mustard, Scarlet, Miss White, and Mrs. Peacock, along with Mr. Bobby, who is the host of the party, of course, and the person who's killed. All the weapons are there, the noose, the lead pipe, the poison vial, the pistol, the dagger, and the candlestick. All the characters carrying the weapons, like, you don't know who the murderer is until the last one. The only thing I have not finished yet is the mansion, which is still being worked on. But I hopefully have this finished within the next month or so, and everybody will get a reveal of Clue Mansion with the Clue characters in G.I. Joe format.
That's awesome. Seriously. I can't wait to see that. That just sounds amazingly cool.
The figures are beautiful. I've seen the figures are done, like you said, but he's working on the mansion. They are spectacular. It's probably one of my favorite things he's done, and I'm actually looking forward to him finishing up the mansion.
Can't wait to see where you go with this one.
Just last night, I got into a conversation with my niece. She just turned 21. Anyway, I was talking to her, and I made a Clue reference to my brother, and he got it. He laughed, and she's like, "Huh?" And he's like, "Don't worry about it. It's about Clue, the board game Clue." And she's like, "Oh yeah, we have Clue, but we don't play it because we're missing a card." And I just started laughing. I was like, "You couldn't find it?" She's like, "No." I'm like, she didn't see the irony in not being able to find a clue to a card to Clue at all.
You don't have a clue to Clue. I thought I liked that one. She didn't have a clue about the reference to Clue, and two, she looked at a clue card to became a clue. So she doesn't have a clue on most cards.
And
she doesn't have a clue about the reference and a clue about the game.
I'm like, did you check the candlestick holder in the kitchen? Did you look there? Oblivious. Oblivious. She totally didn't get it.
She was in the library.
Clueless.
She was clueless.
I found that most young people are clueless.
Get off my lawn!
Yeah, I'm turning 40 this year. I am turning into that old man. Everybody's like, goddamn kids!
I am right with you.
So, Brent, has there ever been a project where just it hasn't gone well? Or, you know, what'd you do to turn it around?
Well, as far as the project that didn't go well, but I couldn't turn around with, I actually want to make a full-scale version, well, not a full-scale, of course, but a Joe-scale version of the Pig from the first G.I. Joe comic book. You know, and judging from the images and the pictures that were in the first G.I. Joe comic book made by Marvel, in the second page of double-page pull-out, I was trying to estimate how big it would be to actually make the proper scale. And I realized that the massiveness of this thing would be way too big for me to fit in my apartment. It would actually take up about two-thirds of my apartment. And I realized that I can't make this. I have to grab it. It's just something I could not fathom the size. I got from the side of the side, but could not feasibly create. I've seen other people tackle the Pit. But the thing, like Dan said, I like a challenge sometimes, and I'm a little wise when it comes to creating customs. I try to get the effectiveness of it. So I wanted it to be exactly the scale as it would be for JoJo figures, and I would need a place the size of my apartment just for that one thing. As far as customs, I haven't gone well, and I had to turn around and redo it over again. I mean, I've had times where the paint wasn't bonding right and it looked clumpy, and I just basically scrubbing down, sanding down, and restarting from scratch and working it out, redoing it again. You know, just sometimes you work on a custom and it didn't come out exactly where you want it, but like anything, you can start from the beginning. You just you you can send it back and redo it over again. And I've got customs that just basically have been sitting in the back burner for a while because the parts are there, everything's together. It just couldn't come up with a proper color scheme for the figure. I have one right now I'm working on. It's a Canadian dreadnought called Auger. And the biggest problem I'm having is coming up with a proper color scheme for his clothes. And Dan actually gave me a suggestion that for his vest, I should make it look like a he basically took the jacket off of Mally with the sleeves off of it. And he was one of the Canadian sports teams for his t-shirts, which I'm just trying to figure out which sports team to utilize, but I like the idea. It's a great concept, and I'm going to run with that. But as far as customs that I've actually been thinking about planned, like I said, I really don't plan them out. They just kind of happen on their own websites.
They're like Bob Ross's happy little accidents.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, a custom, it's like, you know, there is no person looking on the store telling you this is how it has to be. This is what you must make it look like. It's a custom. You can do it whatever you want. There is no boundaries. There's no limitations. You know, and a lot of guys, you know, look at the customs that we do, and a lot of us have been customs for years. And a lot of guys out there just starting games for a hobby. And, like, you know, I can't do that because I'm not that good. Well, you know what? None of us were. About 90% of us never went to art school and was learning by ourselves, trial and error. And luckily enough, now we have sites such as Joe Customs to actually learn the trade and the hobby. And we'd love to see more people doing customs. I mean, I actually picked a purchase on eBay a while back, a custom made by one of the sons of Customizer who made a custom figure of Fred Dead behind the waterfall from the one of the JoJo comic books. And there's only three versions. The one I have, the one his father has, and the one his son did, which was also featured at the JoCon. And the kid's only 8 years old. And he did a great job for a young kid just starting out with a hobby. And there's a few other guys that are just starting off, or me and the son, I mean, coming out some great work, you know, been doing it for years, but just recently posting. There's a gentleman, not sure if you're pronouncing his name right, but his name is Arcatuna, or Arcatuna, he's from Brazil. A lot of guys have seen this cover commander that started off as random parts of bodies from different Real American Hero figures, and he sculpted and sanded and created one of the best looking cover commanders I've ever seen. And everything was done by scratch. And his Kangor figure, in my opinion, was the best Kangor ever. Because it didn't look like a repaint of a big opponent, it looked like a unique character all to himself. You know? And I definitely know, as far as customizing, just practice and try it out and get any questions. I mean, anybody on the boards can help everybody out as far as suggestions, ideas. And when you post a figure up online, don't be afraid of hearing about critiques or negativities because of the fact that, you know, someone said, listen, you should have done this better or done this way. You learn from that, you know, and so you know that's a great kind of idea. Look at what we've done, and look at what other people have done, and you know, just practice, you know. But there's no figure that you know I say about me. Even the worst custom I ever did, it's still the custom I did. So even though I don't like it, I'm still not happy with what I've done so far as far as the stuff I've done.
Well, we're always our own worst critics.
Not me. In the back of my head, it's like, everybody's going to love this. This is the best custom.
I think you got to look at it from this is where I started, and this is where I'm at now, and, you know, kind of down the line, this is where I want to be. You know, that's part of your growth, and that's with anything, you know, customizing or, you know, just being a human being in general.
Exactly. You got to remember where you started, and you can actually judge how far you've come based on these old customs and these old things that you did. You can literally see the amount of progression you've made. I actually keep a small handful of my oldest customs, probably from the mid-80s, of some Star Wars droids. And, yeah, granted, they look terrible compared to the stuff that I do now, but they're there as a reminder of where I started.
Yeah.
I saw the original customs I did as well when I reverse started customizing the action figures as a little, you know,
I consider it like a snapshot in time. This is, you know, where my skills were at this point in time. And Unfortunately, some of my earlier customs just, they were so bad, they just fall apart now. That's how awful they were.
Yeah, but you gotta remember your roots. You know, you gotta go back to your roots and, you know, this is where I came from and, you know, this is the direction I'm going. And, you know, this is the goal I've set forth for myself in the next, you know, 5-10 years.
You know, like I told you, though, I mean, when it comes to customizing, you know, it should be fun. You know, it shouldn't be a job. It should be a challenge. I mean, if you like the challenge yourself to be fun, then it should be a challenge. But it's something you should get joy from. I mean, I've seen guys get depressed when they win a figure contest and say, I'm not going to customize anymore. It's like, are you making the customs just for the contest, or do you do it because you enjoy it? And that's what it should be. It should be about enjoyment. You know, you should find joy in making these things. You know, if you want to sell, make it and sell on eBay so people can enjoy it, hey, that's great, you know. But as long as you're doing it because you enjoy it to begin with, that's what it comes down to. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, we've touched on a previous podcast about how therapeutic it is to customize, and I think you bring a great point back to the table about, you know, how you should go about customizing and the awards or the feelings you should get after succeeding.
Having judged contests before and probably will in the future, and having entered contests, you really have no clue what each individual judge is looking for. It's never a testament of, you know, what you personally might think the best custom is, because your opinion is different than my opinion, that's different than his opinion. It's really up to such individualized taste that you should never be ashamed if you don't come away with some, you know, trinket, trophy, or award or something. It's really just beyond you. As long as you're happy with the results, that's honestly all that counts.
Oh, that's true. I mean, as far as, you know, judging a custom contest, I mean, you can have 100 submissions, and you can be a judge and say, you know, every one of them's great, but, you know, you can only pick 3 figures in a contest. You know, and you gotta make a decision, you know, which you think is the best. I mean, they're all been great. It's just the fact that you can't pick all of them, and that's the thing. I mean, they may not be saying besides that they don't like the custom, or they don't like the person who made the custom. It's just they can only pick 3 pieces out of all of them. You know, but you know what? It's like when I went to the Joe Carn in 2010 in Rhode Island, and I wrote my customs down. None of my customs won. But you know what? I don't care about getting a blue ribbon for winning a contest. Because, you know, in my opinion, the ribbons, I'll throw them away anyway. They're useless. What it matters is what other people have said. You know, if all the people in the convention say, you know, that's amazing, that's great, I love that. Or look at the boards and you post your stuff, they'll be like, that's amazing, I love the ribbons. Then I love to have this thing. Or you have people say, hey, can you make me one for myself, also? That's the most important thing, you know, I mean, as far as, you know, a contest, it's insignificant. You know, you win, you lose, it doesn't matter. What matters is how you feel about what you created and the positive feedback you get from others about the stuff you created.
Why don't we tie this into the next segment? I actually did want to talk about some of the customs and dioramas that came out of Indianapolis at the convention. Besides your friends that you helped work on with them, were there any Frank and Joe entries or pictures or anything from the convention that really stood out to you guys that really blew you away?
Well, I saw part that was actually there to make it this year. But I gotta say, I mean, I was looking at the pictures that you had posted of the photographs from the convention, and I was amazed by everybody's work. I mean, everybody did some great stuff. There's some great customizing out there, great stuff. The one thing that really stood out for me out of everything, though, was the steampunk she had just set up. Just inspirational. It was awe-striking. I'm not sure who did that, but that was one of the most incredible customs. I love the idea of steampunk. And the execution of how they created that was just funny. I mean, anybody has not seen it yet, you've got to check it out. I know people of you had posted up the pictures from the JoeCon, and there was a photograph of the steampunk sets that we got. That was a whole, it wasn't just figures, but a whole diorama display, which is amazing.
Yeah, the steampunk pirate diorama, that one, everybody was talking about that particular diorama. all weekend long. It was really well done.
Yeah, I like that one. It's beautiful.
I enjoyed the steampunk, but I also liked seeing the JCW in action once again.
That Hulk Hogan, he actually lives in Indianapolis, and he asked if he should bring in. I was like, sure, we'll find a spot for it somewhere on the Joe Customs table. You know, we brought shelves and stuff. And then he brought it, and he brought all the wrestlers, and we had just such a good time. I was like, we should enter this as for one of the contest entries. He was like, do you think we'll win? Hell no, but let's do it anyway. And I watched, who was it? Bad Ash, Joe Czar, and Hulk Hogan. And occasionally Zombie Guy and a few of the other guys would, like, just check it out. But watching those three put that together, I mean, they played. They sat there and played with everything, trying to, like, create scenarios for it. And Hulk Hogan was, like, picking up storylines from when we used to have the Joe Customs Wrestling Federation and stuff. Just going, oh, yeah, and this guy, he was fighting with this guy about a girl. Just crazy stuff. Picking up all – it was really fun to watch.
You know, it's funny. We kind of went from little kids playing toys to being grown men. Not complaining to toys, but creating battle scenes and battle stories. It's still the same thing. You know, it was the most important thing about when you're a kid, you had to play toys, you had fun. That's what's good about that, having fun, you know? That is joy and pleasures.
Well, you had mentioned, like, you know, sometimes just throwing parts together. Some of my funnest times at the conventions are just when you get a group of guys together with, you know, some figures or some vehicle parts and seeing what the, you know, what strange things you can come up with.
Definitely. I actually, one of the groups I was with, I was a part of, the Tri-State Pipers, and one of the guys did the pass-along figure set, where basically you get a body part set to you, and you can add whatever body part you want, and it went on and on and on to actually create the final figure. Not sure actually I ever got posted, but I mean, we were all impressed by the after fact because you couldn't make any modifications, but you can do anything you want. You can add any part you wanted. And the fact that you see the randomness of what people can come up with, you take numerous people and just having a head for one person, a torso for this person, a left arm for that person, a right arm for that person. And even though it's a menagerie of parts, you can come up with some great ideas with different people mixing together.
Right. Matthew did a custom. It was for somebody requested it. A wife had requested it for her husband. And it was like a group custom where everybody kind of like, I focused on accessories. Tier 1er didn't focus on the paint. And Matthew focused on the parts themselves, the base figure. And just watching the final result of that, I mean, it, not quite as cool as what you're talking about, but it's the only project I've worked on where it was like that, where it was a total group effort, and I didn't know what the final custom was going to look like.
Was that the ink project?
Yeah, the ink project.
Yeah, I did the camo one. I remember that finally.
Oh, crap. Sorry. I gave credit to the wrong person.
Not a problem.
More important, actually. Usually, always my work the most is a suburban air. Also, Otto, the otter, and he was actually working on a flag crew for his flagship, and sent me heads and torsos of Flash, Tripwire, and Tripwire heads, and wanted to make the skills. And then he sent me the part, saying, "Well, he's making skills look like the skills for a cruise ship." So I actually looked online at what actual skills look like, which, if anybody doesn't know, in the Navy, the skills are the actual crew on the naval ship. The fuel carriers, the armory guys, the munitions personnel, and their uniforms have the purple vests, purple helmets, right vests, right helmets, and all the different colors. And I was actually able to make them look unique enough, people with mustaches, paint on, and different skin tones, even though they're all the same heads, to look like different people. And it actually inspired other people, I believe, to make the same kind of figures as well. And, a few of his customers, which he did of his group, of his friends, he sent me some heads ahead of one suit from one of his friends that wanted to make a bone neck choker. And I was actually able to make, you know, like the little plastic tubes that come on the plastic wires, the plastic wires to make the actual bone necklace thing. And he was referring me back to a lot of guys for the work that he actually has up on the board interest in the customs that I come up with to help him out with some stuff, such as the helmsman for his flag, which is wearing a baseball cap, which is a little hard to see the pictures, but if you look close enough, it actually has a picture of a flag of the nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, which is what the flag was, with a designation CVN-99 on a little patch on the hat. And it seems like that, which, you know, the fact that he actually contacted me, wanted to know if I can help him out with a couple of his projects that he was working on, that he has seen my work and was inspired by that stuff to actually get in contact with me to do some work for him.
Well, even like the NJCC customs, those aren't just like one person, the exclusives that they do. That's like a group of 20 that they pull together parts and, you know, cast the parts and the head and the helmets and the vests and all that stuff. And those turn out, you know, anytime you're doing mass production of a fan project like that, it does. It takes a group effort to pull them together.
A figure or two here and there, you know, you can do yourself. But if you're doing something that's going to be a large amount for numerous amount of people, you're trying, you know, do something, you know, I would never recommend anybody tackle it by themselves. You know, you always want to have some people help you out. You know, and the fact that, you know, more people involved in it, you know, the better. Because everybody can say, you know, I made that. You know, how many people can say that they're part of that, you know, other people are enjoying, you know.
Well, I'm going to use that as a segue to the NJCC. So you guys are going tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going to pick up Ryan, and then I'm also picking up SG Capers coming with us, too. I got to pick him up from the train station, and we're going to head on down to Cherry Hill.
Cool. Was there anything you guys were looking forward to in particular?
Well, as per usual, the Joe Declassified guys always have a lot of cool stuff out, so we definitely want to check that out. Hopefully it wouldn't be too bad to win one of those Salvo giveaway figures you were talking about, and hopefully get some good deals in the dealer room.
And, you know, I'm going to, you know, get down there, you know, show, you know, the customizers and you agree on belt down there. And, you know, Joe Declassified actually have to offer this year, you know, because, you know, they'll come up with some new stuff and new information as far as their site goes. So it's always going to get the 411 before it goes out, you know, and it's a great idea to place to meet and greet people, you know. And as far as, you know, I'm only looking on a new lookout for auto parts and things like that, so. You know, a lot of great stuff out there, a lot of great, you know, collectibles and fodder parts, so you never know what you can find there. You know, it's a great place, and a lot of guys looking for fodder parts on eBay, you know, not everybody posts, not everybody has the time to go online, so, hey, the New Jersey Collectors Club, you know, convention is a great place to find stuff you've been looking for.
Yeah, anytime you can hit a sales floor that has, like, you know, toys and Joes in bulk, do it. That's you're gonna get a much better price than you will on eBay.
Yeah, no shipping. Plus, you get the significance of actually having it at that moment, instead of hoping the post office doesn't lose it in transit.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of the guys actually who sell the stuff that's true saw a lot of shipping to buy on eBay because there is no eBay fees.
Yeah, no eBay fees, and don't forget to haggle. That's one of my favorite figures. Fun School figures.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I expect some reports when you guys get back.
Well, I'm bringing my camera. I'm going to take lots of pictures. I'm going to try to get a chance, hopefully, to talk to the Joe Declassified guys a little bit. And, you know, any other talent they have down there.
Must have sound bites.
And my girlfriend did promise her services to Dan on Sunday to take notes or anything. He might forget to take it.
Yeah, I expect you guys to be overwhelmed with stuff. I really do. I've heard it's a good show.
My first time going. I've never gone before, but Brian said it's
good. I've been here before, and I recommend anybody in the New York, New Jersey area, Philadelphia, you know, you get a chance. It's only about an hour and a half, 2 hour drive from Midtown, New York. You know, great place to go, and it's a Toys R Us, Walmart, Target around the area. And there's also a place called Bob Evans. If most of them have heard of Cracker Barrel, but if you want a better home cooked quality food with a southern feel, Bob Evans is the place to eat. They have the best sausages and biscuits around. Sausage gravy biscuits, I should say.
We have a lot of Bob Evans around here, and that is one of my favorite places to eat.
Oh, yeah, it's so good, isn't it?
It does remind me of Cracker Barrel minus the shtick. That was shtick, not Brad, did you want to bring up the brain free, the bio stuff?
Yeah, I was just kind of curious how you guys go about, we talked about in previous podcasts and previous segments about, you know, how we come about with characters and how we come about with the bios. I was kind of curious how you guys go about, you know, when you have an idea in mind and kind of hit a brick wall. You know, what do you do with that? You know, and throwing this out to Dan more so than anybody, you know, how do you get over the writer's block? You know, what do you do to get to the next level?
A lot of times, I do have to say that honestly, I don't really suffer from a lot of writer's block, but there have been times when I've been stuck for a particular facet of a character's bio. But usually a lot of times my costumes are planned out so far in advance that the bio is more or less written before the figure even starts being constructed. And so, the people that see my costumes online, usually there's those giant paragraphs above it that tell the story that most people ignore. That's been written a long time before the figure was constructed. I usually work out any kinks before I actually get to the actual customizing phase. But there have been times when I've been stuck on things and I've had to do a little research and just find a way to get through it. But like I said, I've been lucky. I don't really suffer from a lot of writer's block.
Well, I like giant paragraphs. I'm good with those.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm one of the guys that actually scroll through all the scripts to get to the figures. You know, I get no much time to read through the storylines because he has pages and pages of story before he actually gets to the figure. And that's what the figures he does, because he does some great stuff.
Thank you.
For me, I just go back to the figure or the specialty. You know, what is it that I want this character to do? What is he supposed to be? Sometimes just holding the figure and just like, you know, playing with it, the figure, trying to figure out what kind of character he is, that's helped a lot. There's a lot of times where it's like, you know, character's fun to play with. You like moving his arms. Well, let's put two pistols in his hands. Oh yeah, he's a two pistol kind of guy. Well, okay. He's that kind of character. He's a mercenary who's just like all about flying bullets. And all of a sudden, that takes over, and that's his story. You know, and then trying to just find a background that kind of fits where the personality I've kind of come up with. Honestly, it's a lot of that. Or sometimes I'm like, Dan, I have a story in my head, and it's just a matter of connecting the dots. So I'll do way more research than I probably should ever be doing for, you know, a paragraph's worth of information and come up with something that kind of makes sense.
Well, just so you know, John, the NSA has been watching over you, okay? You've been doing too much research.
Yeah.
So, John, what you're saying is you like to hold it and play with it until the idea comes.
Not always. What I'm saying is sometimes I like to think about it before I play with it.
Well, do you guys find your inspiration in historical references, or do you find them in movie characters or comic characters? You know, kind of elaborate on that.
It all depends on what type of character it is that I'm doing. A lot of what people know me for online is the fact that I will do a lot of crossovers into the Star Wars universe, you know, taking the Pirates of the Caribbean or Batman or, you know, historic figures. I will use as much of the source material as possible to really sell the fact that this is supposed to be that character. So a lot of times I find myself you know, looking up Wikipedia information about specific things if I don't already have the information in my head, or trying to reference historical battles or historical figures if I'm trying to create a Star Wars parallel of that character. So there's a lot of different research in a lot of different directions. Everything from comics to real-world history to even stuff that I just make up. I have to really try to find a way to make it all work.
Well, just to throw you in the bus, Dan, I'm still waiting for Generator X.
The biggest problem with that figure is I'm trying to figure out how to make all his builds interchangeable without dealing with, like, the frailty of, you know, custom pegs and whatnot. Brian had actually suggested to me a while back about using rare earth magnets, so I'm looking into that idea. And I want to be able to swap out, you know, all of his arms and his legs with all the different builds that he does on the show.
So if you need some, I actually have a few here at home that you can borrow. And they're very easy to work with. You know, all you gotta do is jump into the plastic, make a little hot socket for the magnet to go into, and super glue together so it doesn't pop out. Just make sure that when you put it together, though, you're putting the negative side to the positive side and vice versa. Otherwise, you'll have repelling arms, which is still a funny effect, you know.
Well, Brian, I'm calling you to the table, and you know, you gotta make sure, Generator X happens.
Alright.
The rare earth magnet, that's the way to go for that. Especially if you're going to be doing multiple attachments and all that. I wouldn't do pegs with those at all. The magnets will hold it on there nice and snug and easy to pull off, too.
Well, as I was saying, I have a lot of different builds in mind, and there's going to be at least six different sets.
Are you working at custom right now at the same time you're talking to us?
No, I'm not doing anything at the moment. I'm just sitting in front of my computer.
I know your computer's right next to your custom section, and you're probably working on custom at the same time. What we're hearing now is Dan actually filling out his tools, and he's actually working on custom at the same time he's on the podcast.
I've only done that through half of them. I don't do that through all of them.
We know Jeff is guilty, and I will admit I am guilty as well.
You guys would hear a lot more swearing if I was customizing while recording.
How many times do you stab yourself with a scalpel knife?
That's a ritual. I sacrifice my fingers to the custom gods.
Well, you're for the blood sacrifice.
We always said the thing, you know, if you don't cut yourself, name yourself, burn yourself, or put a jumble bit into your fingertip or your eye, you're really not customizing. Of course, you don't even remember wearing safety glasses.
We got to start using the goat soundbite. You know, I don't know if you guys have seen it or not, where some folks are taking, like, popular songs and the high notes are adding the various sounds. We need to add that as one of our sound bites for editing our podcast.
Yeah, I've seen that. It was pretty funny.
I think as a customizer, having duct tape on your desk is pretty much a given. That's how you cure cuts real quick.
Crazy glue.
Duct tape or super glue? I like super glue. It dries faster, and you can still work with it afterwards. It's a little hard to work with duct tape fingertips.
Yeah, you lose some of your dexterity and your sensitivity.
Yeah.
There's a joke in there somewhere. I haven't figured out.
Well, the duct tape is good for your nagging wife that says, hey, are you going to finish? You know, we got things to do today.
Wow.
Peter, I want to know what you thought about having the voice artist for Lady J and Flint sitting there at the Joe Customs table during the convention while their name is being, you know, announced overhead that they'll be here for a specific speaking part.
You know, that unreal, I think, is the best way to sum it up. Joe Michaels had set that up. He told them they should stop by, and they actually did. And the fact that they came with, like, a group of people tagging behind them was just crazy. And getting to sit there, and Mary McDonald Lewis, she got it. She understood. She even says it in the video. Oh, you guys are just artists who use the action figures as your canvas. It was like, yes, you have summed up better than we have exactly what we do. And Bill Radner was just that whole convention, you would hear so many people talking about how easygoing he was, how he would see our badges and see where we're from, and always had like some quick story or anecdote about how he'd been to that place or had worked for them. Or I think he told Joe Czar he'd done some news affiliate voice work for his news station, you know, that kind of stuff. The news station in his city. He was like that with everybody. So getting them to sit there and look at the customs and I'm still verklempt over that. Matt, I'm sorry, Hypno Hustler, having him be able to show them how the figures come apart, how to take them apart. It's like, oh my goodness, the whole entire weekend and everything we were trying to do at the convention for just regular fans, getting it to do it with Joe Lebrities, that was unreal, just unreal.
Yeah, I wish I could have been there for that. That must have been really cool.
It seemed like they really enjoyed it, too. I mean, it was kind of neat. You could tell by her interest, she was examining everything and was, like, totally into, you know, what was going on.
Yeah, I don't know if they did that with any of the other booths, but the fact that they did it to us was just... Did I mention unreal? Have I said that? There's just no other words to describe it. And just... great people, fun. But yeah, getting to show them and having them show that much interest was something I'm never going to forget, that's for sure.
Yeah, so that was a great time. I mean, I wish I could have made it myself. I mean, Joe Conventions, it went for Best of New. Now, we had this for the Joe's venue, but also being the people that we all consider friends on the line and on the boards that you actually never get to see. One time a year at the conventions.
Somebody like Justin Bell, Generals Joe's, I've probably seen twice a year, Toy Fair and JoeCon. And we're pretty good friends. We hang out on Facebook and on, you know, the web, the internet sites and stuff. But as far as face-to-face interaction, it's usually related to G.I. Joe.
Basic, B-Love, you got an in. Bring her on the podcast.
Woo. A request. Sure. I'll look into that. We'll see if we can't make that happen. I'm writing it down. All right, well, let's kick into the next segment. Any customs this week? Anything stand out to you guys?
Outstanding! Best of the best of the best, sir. With honor.
I gave it a 10! Woo!
Brian, you're the guest. Why don't you go ahead and any custom stand out for you?
I'm thinking. I mean, I was thinking a few the other day in terms of what stood out the most. There was one of the Dreadnought truck that I'm not sure if you who actually did it, but it was right there with the Thunder Machine body, spliced together with the vamp nose. And the fact that, I mean, my opinion, he did put some more color to it, but the execution of spliced together the two body parts, and you look at it, it doesn't look like two pieces spliced together, it looks like one solid piece, which is amazing. And it's got the vamp nose, the Stinger's bumper, and the Thunder Machine body, and it's just such a seamless blending with two parts, and it looks like it came from a toy shop. You know, that one stood out as one of the best looking customs I've seen this week.
Brad, was there a custom that stood out to you?
I actually am prepared this time. I have a list, which is amazing. You know, I really like Gung Ho Joe's movie Beast. I thought that his adaptation of the character was on the mark. Dr. Robert Strange, which I know Spectre has an affinity for. His Indiana Jones was pretty awesome. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Beachhead, that was just amazing. And Cap's Arisia, work in progress. You know, it's great to see something new from Cap, and I can't wait to see where he goes with that. as far as the stuff that was posted, Ice Cream Man, Spearhead, and Scoop, and Tony Stark's Garage from E and V. Our critique there is he needs bigger pitches.
Yeah.
I got a couple of favorites this week. I liked the three that IW Beta put up, Muskrat, Mainframe, and Doc. As always, fantastic adaptations of the characters. You knew instantly who they were when you saw them. And his work is flawless. And I also have to say, Iron Will's Red Sun, the Russian Superman, that chest symbol alone is one of the most impressive paint jobs I've seen in a very long time. He did that all by hand. That is not a water slide decal.
Right. Yeah.
I agree with Dan on that one. Yeah, that Red Sun Superman, that emblem was amazing. It looks factory. It looked like it was a decal, but like you said, it was all done by hand, and that was the best I've ever seen anybody do of an emblem in that thin line, and that meticulously designed.
You know, one thing I missed by him, though, is his Deathstroke. You know, it's kind of a work in progress, but I can't wait to see how that one turns out in the future.
Yeah. You guys already hit on IW Beta's Doc figure. I love that update. I mean, he took all of the elements from the original Doc and just gave him more modern parts, but also a more modern look to him, too, you know, with the vest with the stethoscope on it. I just thought I would buy that in a heartbeat if it showed up. Dr. Bindi, Dr. Bindi, he had a Dr. Watson. He's doing a Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. I'm really looking forward to that pair. He finished Dr. Watson, and that he looked good. But obviously Sherlock's the one that's going to make or break that tandem. What else? Rob Willis did Ash from the Evil Dead series. And it wasn't that it was a dead-on likeness to Bruce Campbell, but it looked cartoony enough to be like the poster from the Evil Dead series. You know, I just really liked his head choice on that. I thought that was a smart move. And then MJ Tanner, he did the Marvel Now, the Matt Fraction version of the Fantastic Four. I just really liked how he used parts to pull off, you know, the Medusa and the Miss Thing and whoever else makes up that team, Ant-Man and stuff. He did the custom helmet for Ant-Man, made a new sculpt there, a Zarana head fit, a Thing body, but it looks exactly like how the suit looks on the cover of that comic book. I just thought it was really well done.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool set. I like that one too.
So what are you guys working on besides Clue Mansions and Colonel Mustards? The customizing workbench.
Well, unfortunately, the other project I'm working on is going to be a surprise. Like I said, it'll be posted in the next couple of weeks, so it should be posted. And let's just say it goes back to an old school style of my roots, as far as my genre of custom. I mean, that will hint, in a sense. If anybody knows the work I do already and where my focus lies, I'm going back to the beginning of the characters I fell in love with. Something that's going to basically amaze everybody. And said, so far, no one ever can talk about doing this. And, like I said, Dan has seen the work in progress. He's seen a couple of the finished ones already, but I don't post until all of them are finished, and I'm still working on the final one. And like I said, within the next couple weeks, it should be done and be posted, and I believe everybody will be amazed and hopefully inspired by this stuff.
Cool. Dan?
I've been working on a couple different things. I'm still working on my orc army, still figuring out different armor styles for them. But also, I've been working on a sand pirate outpost, and I'm making it look like as if it was a toy that Hasbro would have produced Kenner would have produced in the 1980s for the Star Wars line. I'm using pieces of an 83 Joe headquarters, which I'm still waiting on the generator cover. Joe Michael 70's got one; he's sending me. But I've been assembling all the other parts, and it's coming along pretty nicely. It's going to be a bear to paint, though, because it's going to have my traditional, desert weathering all over it. And there's a lot of little nooks and crannies in all the different pieces I've added that going to look really good when it's all done.
Pratt?
I got a major Kryptonian project I've been working on. I alluded to it, you know, quite a few podcasts back, but it's kind of grown into something I didn't think was going to happen, you know, in the scale I planned on. And I've used some kind of interesting parts that nobody saw happening that were going to go in the garbage, and I rescued them. And I hope to get those posted in the next few days.
Cool. Yeah. Looking forward to that. Let's see. For me, blind pull project, you know, the random parts that we did at Con, I'm trying to come up with a story for that. It's pretty much going to be a dreadnought just based on the parts. He's got Wild Card's torso and Road Pig's waist with the crotch cover. So, I mean, yeah, it's pretty much going to be a dreadnought. It's just a matter of coming up with what kind of dreadnought. So I got to, you know, handle him, figure it out, play with him a little bit, and see what he says. The custom. And then, let's see. I talked about the canvas project that Kevin Watts, Crimson Guard Immortal, Crimson Guard 666, Crimson Sith 666 is working on. I made a Wizard of Oz themed his tank, but I kind of, because of I was in a rush to finish it for the show, a lot of stuff just got tacked on there, you know, with a little bit of glue. I need to solidify it a little bit better, make it so it can be part of his traveling show or whatever he ends up doing with that, reinforcing things, pinning things where they need to be. So that's the priority. And then lastly, I finally have the parts to start my Wounded Warriors project custom that I've been putting off forever due to circumstances beyond my control.
So I look forward to seeing those done.
Yeah. Me too.
So the Wounded Warriors look great, you know. Are you doing that for donate to the charity?
Yeah, we're going to... I mean, it's been slow going with everyone. I haven't really pushed people for it because I'm getting a late start. But, I mean, yeah. I know Dan of the Dead, he finished three of his four that he's actually doing for a local show that he wanted to show them off for. But, yeah, that was the plan, to, like, have everybody pitch in a custom for it. And then we'd auction them off as a set and donate all proceeds to the Wounded Warriors charity. Yeah, I mean, this particular one, it's a really touchy issue because, you know, you're trying to do something that's realistic and something that would appeal to our group of collectors, but at the same time not become something that's kind of a joke custom or something that just makes it too tragic to look at. So it's a real fine line.
You want to be respectful. In the same instance, drive some... I don't know. Imagination?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, you want to be creative. You know, you're not just doing something straight up. You know, like, we'll go with the Hasbro stance. Guys in suits don't sell, you know? So, but at the same time, yeah, you want to make sure you're paying respect to the reality of the situation. Now that I've brought everybody down... We'd try not to get political on the board and stuff, but I'll just put it out there this way. With some federal cutbacks and some government cutbacks. You know, a lot of those guys are coming back to less than what, you know, the military should be giving them. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you guys want to throw in there, or did I forget?
No, I think we're good.
Yeah. That was a quick one. Usually we go much, much longer.
Well, I want to say, I want to thank you guys for having me on the podcast tonight. Yeah, it was a pleasure talking to you guys, and look forward to some interesting new customs from B-Class 74. Posting in the next couple weeks.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm seriously, I'm stoked about that. I can't wait. Thanks for coming on. Thank you, Brad, as usual. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Good night.
Hey, thank you, John. Right. And you guys have a good night. And Dave, I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Yep, I'll pick you up in the morning.
All right. Cutting off.
Once again, the world is a safe place to be, thanks to the G.I. Joe team of experts. G.I. Joe, a real American hero.